Uncovering the tracks that made your hip-hop hits. I'm Professor Ping, and this is Original School. Hello and welcome to Original School. I'm your host, Professor Ping. Each week on Original School, we dive deep into the crates and find the tracks that made your hip-hop hits. Got a special guest for you this week. DJ, producer, and founder of Lo-Fi Radio, DJ Early, is in the studio. I asked Earl to pick out a couple of tracks that he felt were instrumental in his hip-hop career, and he's got some great ones. We're going to start out by playing I Know by De La Soul from their album 3 Feet High and Rising.
Greetings, girl, and welcome to my world of phrasing right up to bat. It's the daisy age, and you're about to walk top stage, so wipe your lattos on the mat. Hip-hop love, this is, and don't mind when I quiz your evolvements before the sun. But clear your court, cause this a one-man sport, and who's better for this than Plugged One. Have to worry about me squashing other deals, cause they've already been squished. Freeze the frame of our moves the same, wish we can continue right behind the bush. You'll stay with me, I know this, but not because of all my earthly treasures, or regardless to the fact that I'm past the noose, but because... I cut this dance to introduce myself as the chosen one to speak. Let me lay my hand across yours and aim a kiss upon your cheek. The name's Plug Two, and from the soul I bring you the daisy of your choice. May it be filled with a pleasure principle in circumference to my voice. About those other Jennies I reckoned with, lost them all like a homework excuse. This time the magic number is two, cause it takes two, not three, to seduce. My destiny of love is brought to an apex. Sex is a mere molecule in this world of lust that I have for you. It's true, true. Now it's time to let this rhyme style get somewhat poured in the mold. Hold my hand, we'll pick my plantation of daisies for a bouquet of souls. Life will begin right at the cut of a rim. Take it as filled to the rim, as in brim. Squeeze your stoop like Betty Boop, then make camel alphabet soup and spell Plug Ones within. Forward marching to say when transistors will play. Coming to bed is the move. Dolby sound will be then top crown when I put the needle into your groove. I got a good thing, and in full swing. I show this in gifts, words or letters, but even without those three, I know you'd be close to me, cuz. It's I again, and the soul that I send is taking steps to reach your heart. Any moment you feel alone, I can fill up your empty part. We can ascend till we reach daylight heaven, and in a spin we'll hit the top 10. Then we could meet Mr. Stucky and Pops Brother Lucky will preach, let the wedding begin. Shot by an arrow of Cupid through a string of a G-clef, my dear, I claim your death. And if you could hear me, by golly G, true goy is ready for what you possess. We could live in my Plug Two home, and on Mars where we could be all alone, and we make a song for two, picture perfect things, and I sing of how
track is I Know from De La Soul off their album 3 Feet High and Rising, released in 89. It was the debut album of De La Soul. They sampled from all over the place.
Shout out to Prince Paul in the production, you know, the unsung member of De La Soul, really.
Source Top 100. part of the Library in Congress in 2011, if you didn't know that one. The same year that Steely Dan's Asia was inducted into the Library of Congress. So,
wow.
This is a nice little fact.
Interesting.
Where did you first hear it? I grew up in hearing Steely Dan. My brother was a big, like, progressive rock fan, like, drilled That's a Rush and, you know, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and, like, you couldn't get away from Steely Dan. So when I heard De La Soul do it, it, like, blew my mind that they were using something that I knew so well from a rock song in a hip-hop song.
Yes. That's the same for me, because the first time I heard Steely Dan was, well, growing up, it was... We go to my aunt's house, and she had a record crate from my uncle. My uncle was a huge record collector, and he had tons and tons of vinyl, and he would discard the stuff that he got tired of and give it to my aunt, his sister. And so when we would go visit them, I would go through that record crate and find stuff that I liked. The one that everybody liked was Steely Dan. My mom liked it. My aunt liked it. I liked it. So that one would get played a lot. So it was a regular thing, Steely Dan song. Yeah, I mean, not so much the progressive rock. It was more on the cool jazz, Chuck Mangione, Herbie Mann, that kind of music. So to me, hearing a hip hop group sample that was just, you know, I'd been exposed to. Growing up in Iowa originally, that's, I guess I might want to start there. I grew up in Iowa where there was no hip hop on the radio. So I was exposed to things like Run DMC and LL Cool J and kind of the more mainstream stuff. But I had a friend who had moved from Washington, D.C. And he was all into the brand new hip hop that I had never heard before. And he had cable TV. And he was able to see the video shows. And so
how old were you?
My senior year of high school, this was 1989, I was in swing choir, and my swing choir had a chance to go to New York for a competition on my senior year. So the last day I was there, he had given me a list of a couple things that I should go find when I was in New York, because you couldn't buy these in the record stores in Iowa. There was no hip hop at all in the record store. So I went to New York. He gave me a list, and it was the Jungle Brothers and De La Soul. And I only had probably $12 left in my wallet at that time. So I was like, okay, which one do I get? Which one do I get? I hadn't heard either one. I'd only heard Me, Myself, and I from De La. And, so I was like, okay, I'm going to get that cassette. I spent my last money that I had in New York City at this little corner store. I didn't get to listen to it until I got on the plane flying home. And I put on my headphones. I had the classic yellow Walkman.
Indestructible Walkman.
With the foam headphones and everything. And listened to it on the plane all the way home, and I was just blown away. I mean, they were sampling Hall & Oates and Steely Dan and, you know, weird French records with language, you know. I mean, I was just like, who does this? How can I mean, this is for me. That was it. Right? That's really what made me want to be. Before that, I had never seen another DJ or really even thought about hip hop as something that could be something that I could even relate to or be part of. And when I heard that, I was like, man, I know this music. The way they flipped that, I could hear. I mean, I have so many ideas from that. So that's what really, like, kind of got me into really loving hip hop, was the fact that Prince Paul took these samples and turned them into great hip hop songs with, you know, with these lyrics, you know, that were not your run of the mill, you know, hardcore type stuff. It was the Daisy Age, you know, and that was the brand new age of hip hop. And I would say I'm probably responsible for breaking De La Soul in Iowa just through the passing of the tape around to everybody else who didn't have it, you know? Because I mean, I remember three guys asked me to listen to that tape on the airplane on the way home. And so I listened to it once, and then I passed it around, and I ended up dubbing it for numerous people. I went into my freshman year of college.
Where were you?
The University of Iowa.
So you're still in Iowa?
In my hometown, yeah. I literally moved across town.
Star for hip hop, living in Iowa.
Yes. You know, I had on my dorm room door, I had quotes of all these different songs, you know, from everything from the Grateful Dead to Public Enemy and De La Soul and stuff like that. And people would come by and knock on my door and be like, hey, yo, did you draw this? Did you, you know, I had all these drawings and stuff. And my next door neighbor, he was from New York. He took me to New York after my freshman year. I went to stay with him for a summer in New York City and lived with him in Brooklyn. And really got to experience the New York thing. And man, you know, hearing DJ Red Alert on the radio.
Oh, wow.
That's when after that, I went home and I found a way to buy turntables.
Yeah. So what year was that about?
1990 was the summer I spent in New York.
Yeah.
So I remember just, I got a job as a bike messenger, actually. And just took over the city on my bike.
There's such an interesting time in hip hop.
2 years later, I'm on the air on KRUI, the college radio station in Iowa City. Actually, probably a year later after my New York trip. And I was doing a hip hop show, breaking all those songs that I had never heard on the radio before. So it was a cool time for me and a cool time for Iowa, like seeing and hearing that brand of music, that style of music, and not just hearing Public Enemy or stuff that would, you know, be the commercial type stuff. I tried to give them the stuff that I had been exposed to in New York and seen. And, you know, I lived there for a whole summer, you know, on my own, kind of in a way. So I got to really, really dig deep and be, you know, feel like I was part of the city and representing some part of that in some way and bringing that home. It was cool, you know. It was definitely a good time, and you know, I met a lot of people through that and started DJing parties and you know, doing the black fraternities and sororities and all that too from that. So,
well, I'm glad you picked this song. Everybody seems to know Three is a Magic Number. Maybe they know Roller Skating Jam called Saturdays, but I really like this choice. And I think it's really representative of more of the album because it really is chock full of stuff.
Well, and if you think about this song, also there's also not just the sample from Steely Dan, but there's the Otis Redding, the sitting on the dock of the bay, that whistle, like, putting those things together was the real genius part of it because they worked so well and they came from completely different places.
Which leads me to our next song. Well, next songs, actually. You wanted to dissect the same song. So let me play that track. It's Beats to the Rhyme by Run DMC from their 1987 album, Tougher Than Leather. DJs and MCs coming up next. Beats to the rhyme of the rhyme I just made. Party at the jammy till life's a nice babe. Two men for the culture, we all get paid. So let's go. Yo, D, that's me, the king, the MC. Rhyme get mine on a T.O.P. Can another MC ever fuck with me? Hell no. It's like the A from B to the C. It's easy. 1, 2, 3.
good for you. I roam in the zone of the microphone. And I on the throne, but I'm not alone. Not bone of steel and not of stone. I'm known to be prone to make your mama moan. Time for the rhyme, so let's just start dying. Came with the fame and the name divine. Run ever from it, you can give me your ring. Joe got a going now, word from the king. Hardcore, rhymes galore. Giving you more. And like I said before,
I thought it was interesting that the other two tracks you picked. So, you know, of that time, you know, Run DMC was probably the most well-known hip hop group of that era, arguably due to the crossover with Aerosmith, which really introduced hip hop to a whole new audience, and then did that whole like rock and rap thing. But they, you know, where De La Soul samples the kind of the mellower, but equally awesome Steely Dan, you know, here we have Run DMC sampling Billy Squire, a different type of rock and roll altogether.
It's a hip hop essential.
Of course.
And I learned this through a major fail in my DJ career. So back at the University of Iowa, this was probably 1994, 95, around there. Run DMC came to play at the University of Iowa, and they did an outdoor concert. It was the first real hip hop concert ever in Iowa. They played at the Union Field. It was a big, huge, major thing. There was, you know, probably 5,000 people outside out there. And I knew the guy who organized the show. He was a local MC, and there wasn't very many MCs in Iowa at the time. He was a dancer. So he asked me and the other guys that I worked with, our group was called Blunt Instruments at the time. And so he said, yo, I'm gonna get a few groups together and do one song. You each get to do one song to open up for Run DMC. And so we're like, amazing. So we're gonna get to open up for Run DMC. I have a cassette tape that we actually used to perform the song that we performed. But before the show, about 4 or 5 hours before the show, a limo drives up to the hotel. We're down at the field, everything's set up, the stage is going up and everything. And their manager, Run DMC's manager, comes over to us and says, hey, who's the DJ out here? I'm like, that's me, I'm the DJ. And he says, Jam Master Jay forgot his copy of Billy Squire, The Big Beat, and he needs a copy. Do you have one? I said, I don't know. Let me go check. I took him over to my house and we dug through my record crates. I knew I didn't have the original Billy Squire record, but I thought, well, maybe I have a breakbeat record with the breakbeat on it that he could use at least. Now, I went through it. I did not have the Big Beat. I called up a couple friends. They didn't have the sample record. They didn't have the original record. We went to 3 record stores. We could not find the record. I was going to buy the record for them. Now, after going through all this and failing, I realized there's no way Jam Master Jay lost his copy of the record that he's supposed to be performing with. This is before the days of Serato, so you had to have the vinyl. So they get up on stage and they come in later and they perform and everything, and they perform the song that they use, and I'm like, well, he must have found the record. And I realized, you know, it was just a test. And they were coming to see who was a real DJ. And a real DJ would have that record if they knew their history. And that's where I failed that day. And from then on, every time I went into the record store, I looked for that record first. So I could buy that record and not have that ever happen again.
Do you have it? You have it now?
I do have the original Billy Squire record, definitely. I don't have doubles, which I probably should have doubles. But I have the record. So if Jam Master Jay, rest in peace, comes down from the sky and says, Early, hook me up. I need the wax. I'll be able to do that.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to go deeper and talk with Earl about his next pick, none other than Bob James Nautilus. Stay tuned. What's up? This is Professor Ping. If you want to check out all the tracks from tonight, not just the jazz and funky tracks, but the original hip-hop and lo-fi tracks too, just head on over to ProfessorPing.com and click the original school link to Spotify. Welcome back. You're listening to Original School. I'm your host, Professor Ping. On this episode, we've been talking with DJ Earl E. about the fundamental tracks that have helped shape his hip-hop career. So you picked Beats to the Rhyme twice for the show. Because the big beat is in Beats to the Rhyme.
Right, right.
As well as the other track we're going to play, which is Nautilus from Bob James, which is right now is everywhere. Like, they're doing that contest on Instagram. Like, you can flip. Like, Bob James finally got down with the fact that I guess everybody was stealing his stuff anyway, so he might as well license it.
This song has probably been sampled more times than any song in hip-hop history. It is the...
It's everywhere.
The, I guess, the standard for producers to flip. You have to kind of go through the... it's like trial by fire. You have to do certain records. gotta flip Nautilus. You know, you gotta use Funky Drummer. You know, stuff like that are kind of just hip hop essentials, hip hop classic breaks. What's interesting about Nautilus is that before it was ever sampled, it was actually redone by several groups before the days of sampling. Like they would have a live band and the band would recreate the bass line. And but I think the first people to sample it was probably Sed G from Ultramagnetic MCs. He's one of the greatest unsung producers of early hip hop hardcore stuff. He did a lot of the Criminal Minded album for KRS-One, at least some of the essential major poetry. I think he might have did that one. But yeah, I mean, Ultramagnetic is like the MC's group that they say, if you go to someone from that era and say, who's the ultimate hardcore rap group, Ultramagnetic MCs would be that one. Cool Keith, Sed G, just wild out crazy lyrics from, you know, talking about gamma rays and all kinds of weird stuff, you know? But Nautilus itself was a song that was actually played in the parks when they were jamming. They would have Nautilus was a track that was known in itself as being the crowd rocking party jam. And I'm sure DJs were cutting it up and taking the break and mixing it, certain parts of it to get that one piece that they would cut back and forth. When the producers grabbed onto it, there were so many pieces in that song that are unique. It's the sounds that come before the bass line. It's the sounds that only happen like one time in the whole song that just got looped and became familiar. When I did the research, it's only three people playing on that song. It's Bob James on the keyboard. I think his name was Gary King, Gary Davis. I can't remember the bass player. That's my bad. And Idris Muhammad on the drums.
I didn't realize that because I've listened to a lot of his stuff on his own, which is fabulous.
Yeah. And I was surprised myself, and that the fact that it's only three people, and this song was actually meant to be kind of a throwaway. It was slated for the last song on side B of the original vinyl record. And that song generally is meant for the song that has the least ability for radio or least ability to go anywhere. The record grooves themselves are actually closer together, so it kind of muddies the bass lines and things like that, or it's not quite as precise in the recording, you know, in the playback. So it was never meant for anything, and that kind of, from what I read, from what Bob James said, that kind of led to the magic of it, was they were able to stretch out a little bit and just kind of have fun with it, because they knew that this song wasn't really geared for any, pointed to anything. It wasn't really meant for anything. It was kind of really just a filler song.
So I used it in the set. It's live drumming. It's live done. So it's not exact. So you get it into software trying to beat match it. And it's like listening to disco from that era. It's not exact. Like, you really got to finesse it. And so you hear a group like Run DMC sort of like looping it together, or, you know, even producing it live, watching videos or, you know, having seen them live. And you're like, there's a real art to that, really finding that groove, looping it properly, making it sound right. Because otherwise it's just, you know, it's going to start to sound janky and kind of off. And, you know, they did such an amazing job with it. And like you said, like, it's, I mean, I got 300 plus songs, probably far more than that, that have used parts of Nautilus, you know, dozens of covers, like just everywhere, which is, it says a lot. There's something about that era of hip hop, some of the Sugar Hill stuff, taking rhythms and music from like the Tom Tom Club, or people taking kind of like a disco break and rapping of Treacherous Three, or doing sort of, it's almost like dance music. I mean, it really was. It was club music.
Yeah.
And then you, you know, and then sort of people going in the parks, looping it, break dancing, and then it gets a little harder. And so you get, you know, Tougher Than Leather. So then taking that original breaks approach from, you know, playing in the parks, or playing in the communities, and bringing those harder rhythms together, like your Challenge Billy Squire,
right?
You know, Big Beat.
Well, what makes it interesting to me for Nautilus is that it's not a hard hitting song. It's not a rockin' party jam necessarily. It doesn't have hard drums. It doesn't have, I mean, they're groovy, they're cool. There's something about the whole song, the way it just comes together, that is just super cool. That's all I can really say, you know? And I can't imagine going to a park jam and seeing, and people like getting excited, but apparently that's the way it was. It was kind of in the lexicon of hip hop before there was hip hop records, before, like, this was a standard. This was a park standard. People wanted to hear this one. This is the one that just came out of nowhere and became something. It's like it had 6-7 lives, you know. It had that one life in the park as the song that people like to hear as itself, and then it became the song that they remembered the bass line, and then other groups started rapping over that bass line with a band, and then it became the song that got sampled by Run-DMC, and then it became the song that got sampled in the next era by Large Professor and Pete Rock, and then now it's like you said, it's got a whole nother generation of producers in a whole new era using this Tracklib stuff and paying for the sample.
Paying for the sample.
And Bob J finally.
God forbid.
Yeah, right? Well, I mean, I more power to the artist.
No, totally.
For that, but at the same time, the era of us digging through our crates and going to the record stores and finding those breaks, that feeling is kind of lost in a way.
I was going to download it just to sort of see how they broke it out, but Tracklib probably went in, they really had to do some editing because it's not precise. It's not, you know, computer. You can't just run it in Audacity or Acid and sort of like lay the loops out, because it's not precise on the looping. It's not, there's parts, you know, even when I went in and tried to do some extended like beginning and end breaks so that I could mix it in a set, and realized once I got into it how much work I had to do, because it was just enough off that I was like, I'm going to be in like panic mode trying to do transitions during a set versus like knowing that it's more of a regular beat.
Yes.
And it's, you know, it swings. It's got a swing to it. It's not a drum machine for sure. The fact that you said it was Idris Muhammad, yeah, like that, well, it makes more sense now, because he really swings as a drummer. Like, he's got a lot of swing in his rhythm. So.
And that'll take me to a song that I actually, the one time that I've used it was for a project that I called Duke of Earl E. And I sampled Duke Ellington tracks to, it was almost completely Duke Ellington, but for the intro, I sampled Nautilus for the intro track of this Duke of Early album, because I'd never actually flipped the Nautilus beat. I'm like, you know what? I should. Bob James is kind of, a keyboard player like Duke Ellington. It was kind of a homage to that as well. So I thought it was fitting to kind of intro and show that, okay, this is a combination of hip hop and big band Duke Ellington. And my way of showing this is hip hop was sampling Nautilus by Bob James as my drum loop, my drum foundation. And then I took a bass line from Duke Ellington and some horns and doo-wop, 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 doo-wop. And it don't mean a thing without that swing.
Right.
Like you said.
Yeah. Well, I'm digging the early albums. They're always, they're sneaking their way into my sets all the time. It's great.
I appreciate that.
It's really, I'm really having a lot of fun with them. And especially like the jazz samples, but even the sound effects, the kind of like, I'm really hearing a lot of different things going on. So it's been fun kind of, I mean, I try to really slow down and I mean, you've heard the sets I'm putting together. It's a bit of a, you know, it's hip hop, but it's sort of kitchen sink hip hop. Like I'm throwing a lot of stuff at it. And
me too. Yeah.
Yours fits in really well. I was going to say, like, cause you're like putting a lot of the same song.
Yeah. And I like to reference, you know, obscure things and try to put a hip hop twist on it when it's not from a hip hop source. And find a way to fit it in as hip hop. And
you do a lot. You're not just the founder of Lo-Fi Radio. Tell the listeners who you are, where you are, what you're involved in. You know, kind of give us the 411 on DJ Early.
Well, okay. I'm DJ Early. I'm celebrating my 30th year as a professional DJ. Starting out at the University of Iowa. And spent the last 20 years in Los Angeles. I've DJed with live bands, recorded with a couple bands. I've also performed with my group called the Innisobians and my main man, MC Pros. MC Pros and Yetta Rocksky are part of the Innisobians crew, and we host a radio show called Unseen Legion Radio. We've been doing that for about 9 years now, a weekly show featured all kinds of music relating to hip hop. But now we kind of specialize in doing new underground and classic hip hop on the boom bap side of things. Broadcast that at 6 p.m. every Friday on Pacific Coast time. That's on Fleet Boom Radio, on the Fleet Radio app. And then we replay that also on West Coast Fleet Radio at midnight Pacific Coast time. Unseen Legion Radio is my favorite thing that we do. It's my most creative and most in my wheelhouse. Being a producer is something I've been doing ever since I started DJing, really. Starting out looping with a looping, I had a Gemini mixer that where I would loop things and then record them onto a 4-track cassette tape make loops, basically mashups, mix-ups, whatever. And that's my production style is always kind of been there with looping, sampling. And I've never used the MPC or SP-1200 or the classic production tools of hip hop. It's been more of a experimentation and using vinyl and found sounds to make something that is more personal for me, I guess.
What's next for DJ Early?
Well, right now, I'm really liking doing the radio stuff. Lo-Fi Radio has been exciting for me because it's an opportunity to express the other sides of my DJing and love of music born in, because it's not all about cutting and scratching records. It's about picking out great music and sharing it with the people who I relate to most, I think. The people who love hip hop, but also love the sounds that it came from. And especially the early 90s grooves and that kind of stuff. But there's still a lot of great stuff coming out these days. that fit in there. And I know Lo-Fi can keep building the heritage, you know, it's showing the heritage of hip hop, but also showing that it's not dead. It's still about the beats, you know, even though a lot of these guys who are making tracks like Alchemist and Apollo Brown and stuff like that, the drums are so low or they don't have drums. That to me is an unfinished beat, but yeah. That's a whole nother story. Another story we could go into someday on the criticism of some of the way people produce hip hop these days.
You have been showcasing the production of MF Doom, all caps, on the Doom at Noon by just doing the instrumentals, which I find really, it's on right before this show. So like, I always end up catching a bunch of it because I tune in just to make sure I can hear my own. You got to listen to your own shows, right?
But yeah.
I'm always like tuning in. I'm like, you know, the production's great. It's so dense. And he's another guy that really, KMD, if you go back and listen to those albums, it's really picking up the whole thread that a De La Soul was working with, where this, you've got this real broad approach to music that's being compressed into, you know, 3-minute hip hop songs, 4-minute hip hop songs, shorter than that. And so when you pull out the lyric, when he's a great lyricist, but when you pull out the lyrics and really just focus on the production of the instrumentals, you've got an amazing body of music in its own right.
Yeah, and when he flipped the Steely Dan sample for I don't remember the name of the track, but he sampled Black Cow from Steely Dan. In the corner of my eye,
oh, yeah.
I saw you and Rudy. You were very high. And I don't have a huge collection of Doom records personally, but I think his stuff, even though I didn't consume it like a lot of people consumed Doom, I just knew he and I were on the same level production-wise. I love everything that he did. I knew what I was going to like because I feel like we thought the same. He was a purist in kind of trying to keep true to what the record he was sampling did. He didn't manipulate it a lot.
Right. Right.
He picked out the best sounds. Mm-hmm. He picked out the best parts of it and just, you know, didn't do too much. And, you know, probably a lot of those things were never really meant for rhyming over, or it was just like, yo, I'm putting this together because I like this. And that's always the best music, is when somebody's just doing it out of the love. To me, that's what I always felt when I listened to Doom, is that this wasn't meant for consumption. This wasn't meant to be a song, even. This right. was just him making loops and going, this works, and it's really fun making this happen right now. Like, the process for him was probably the best part of it. And for me, that's kind of the way it is, too. It's the process feeling. Yeah, I like to fit pieces together that don't necessarily seem like they fit together, but I also like so many different kinds of music, and there's a lot of different things out there. When sometimes I just hear a song and then there's one little noise that is so unique to that song, like in Nautilus, there's that in the song that is, you can't recreate that. I don't know how they made that sound. I don't know where it comes from, but I've never heard anything like that ever again. It's so recognizable. When you can get that magic and capture it and do something with it new, then that's my love for hip hop. That's when that works, then it's magic. That's it.
Perhaps that's the essence of what a sample really is meant to be. You know, it's a really unique part of a bigger picture, but on its own, it's instantly recognizable. If you played that space noise, whatever, the noise you made, you know, Nautilus on its own and asked a bunch of hip hop heads what song they heard that in, beyond Nautilus, you'd get 50, 75 songs.
Yeah.
But they would probably all know it came from the they would know it came from somewhere. Maybe they thought it came from Beats to the Rhyme because they really popularized that track. But
yeah,
it really is, and it really is that unique essence of it, which I do think gets lost on kind of MPC producing these days. If they're using a lot of the same sounds to make beats all the time, you're not getting a unique. It's not unique on its own right. It might be a good song, but it's like if you pulled out part of a Beethoven sonata and left it on its own, you might not be able to identify who wrote that. Some real classical heads would, but like,
yeah,
you know, it's classical. Like, you know, it's hip hop, but it's produced if it's not that unique little twist or that bit that comes from something that is, it's almost like nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know? If you've been watching like any of the shows, like a WandaVision, where they'll do something like a commercial, right. They're like, oh my gosh, I saw that commercial when I was 5 on TV, like watching TV. Like that was the game show I watched back then. Samples are like that. You know, there's that nostalgia that really jumps out.
And it's not new because, I mean, I know that you were a writing major, right?
Or yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, what is the term for it? Illusion? Illusion?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, Shakespeare, you know, I mean, was it's a concept that is used in the literary world forever, you know? And to me, it's kind of the same thing. Sampling is an allusion to something else. Because the way hip hop is now, there's different eras and genres and styles and even MCs and whatever producers that you can sample something that someone else sampled and almost kind of be referencing if you use it in the right way. Yep. So that to me is a way of keeping the culture going and why I picked these songs today, most importantly, because the history that I had to learn as a DJ to know that I need to know this as a DJ in order to actually call myself a DJ. I have to know the history behind it or else I will never be taken seriously by the artist. And by my listener, if my listener knows more than me, then I mean, hey, I'm not doing my job as a DJ the way I see it. So, you got to know your history. Nautilus is an essential. Billy Squier, Big Beat is an essential. You know, Run DMC were big parts of those songs, both of them as well. But, you know, Live at the Barbecue to me is one of the greatest ones that the greatest Nautilus samples. The first song that Nas came out on with Main Source. Akinelli, I think, was on that track as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, that broke a kind of a new era in hip hop as well, when things were evolving into the De La, Tribe Called Quest, Native Tongues side of things, away from the Eric B and Rakim and BDP kind of drum machine style stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, there's so many different ways it'll still be used to this day. I just saw online a friend of mine, his name's Duke Westlake. He just put out a video of flipping the Bob James Nautilus for that contest. But he's a great producer here on the West Coast and has done a lot of stuff with a lot of great MCs. And I hope to get him in rotation on Lo-Fly here some more too.
Great. If people want to reach you, where can they reach you? Give me your social media. Kind of give us that like what for?
I'm on Instagram at DJ Earl _E. you can check out my website at www.djearl-e.com. And, you know, I don't do Facebook a whole lot, but you can check out our podcast at Unseen Legion Radio. It's unseenlegionradio.com. We have new shows up there every week. And of course, Lo-Fi Radio. I got the Blue Note at night, every night at 9 o'clock Pacific Coast time. Yeah, you know what? I have a lot of music online as well. A lot of my productions are on CD Baby, iTunes, Amazon, everywhere. Just look up DJ Earl-E. And you can find all my music. I have about 4 or 5 instrumental hip hop albums out there that are in rotation on Lo-Fi Radio sometimes here and there. But, you know, the whole catalog's out there. I'm working on Bandcamp as well to put everything up there. And as it is my 30th year of DJing, I'm working on putting together a whole catalog for a special price up there on Bandcamp. So be looking out for that.
Perfect.
Very soon. My DJ Earl E, or the Duke of Earl E album is up there on Bandcamp right now.
Yeah, which is great. It really is. That. Like, yeah, objective, like, you're a friend and all, like, and I would tell you, like, good job, like, even if it was terrible, but it's legitimately really good.
It was a real inspired album. Yeah. I did it in probably, like, 2 weeks, the whole thing.
No
like,
doubt, really.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it takes me like 3 years to even think about doing something. And it was just like, I got to do this. This is the Duke of Earl E. I have to, it was the idea, you know, I guess.
Earl, I want to thank you for joining us tonight on Original School. This is really interesting. Thanks for your picks. I really appreciate it, buddy. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. And, I'm really looking forward to what we're doing here with Lo-Fi Radio and Original School. I'm glad to be a guest. And I hope I can come back and share some more with you.
Absolutely.
Word.